Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. It is tax day. Actually, tomorrow, technically, is the day taxes are due. Traditionally, it's April 15th, but it gets pushed off by a few holidays. April 15th was on a Saturday. Today in Washington, D.C. is Emancipation Day, the recognition of the day that the slaves were freed, so taxes will be due tomorrow. I still haven't finished mine yet, but I'm working on them. All across the nation, there are tax day protesters, including some relatives of mine in Nashville, Tennessee. A shout out to my uncle and aunt, who, with their handcrafted signs, joined a bunch of other Nashvillians to protest Donald Trump for not releasing his taxes. Here in Washington, 25,000 people came out for tax day. Very large for a tax day protest, actually. They don't usually have them that large. And a reminder of the momentum and the energy that is still there. Our side certainly hasn't given up yet. I want to talk today about those winners in the Trump world. We've talked a lot about who's harmed, who's in pain, people who are either poor or middle class or black or Muslim or Jewish or LGBT or women. Women are big losers under Donald Trump. But who are the winners? Who are the people who've done really well under Donald Trump? And I'm going to give you my list and then invite you to join in and tell me who you think are the big winners under Donald Trump. Obviously, in foreign policy, the big winner is Vladimir Putin. He gets to invade a neighboring country without consequences, gets to take pieces of Ukraine that Russia signed a treaty saying they wouldn't take, gets to keep them, and he gets to have basically someone do his will. Now, Donald Trump recently has called out Russia for allowing chemical weapons to murder a bunch more Syrians. And good for him for doing that. I don't think his strike will do much. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference. Russia has now, Russia, Syria, Assad, Iran, Hezbollah, all of them together, have now killed close to 400,000 innocent Syrians. And the fact that he'll have to use conventional weapons to drop bombs on entire neighborhoods and murder people that way rather than just gassing them, doesn't make a huge bit of difference, but, you know, hey, one thing he did, very minor thing. But Vladimir Putin is a clear winner. Hillary Clinton was very strong, very anti-Russia, and Putin, of course, got his spies in and spies in early, and frankly, I think these investigations will show that there was coordination between Trump's campaign and the Russians. But who else? Who else wins? We've talked a lot about Russia. Who else wins under Donald Trump? Well, say you're a big company that wants to blow up mountains and pollute our rivers. Well, you win big under Donald Trump. We've talked on this broadcast in the past about how coal companies are firing all their coal workers, or 90% of them, and bombing mountains instead, using weaponry actually larger than the mother of all bombs in total, transforming beautiful, rolling 4-billion-year-old Appalachian mountains into lunar landscapes. Because we all know trees and birds and all that kind of stuff. Who needs it, right? So if you want to have less birds, less trees, if you want more arsenic in your river, if you want to have poison that can kill toxic fish that annoy you with that fishy smell, you're a big winner. You're a Trump winner. And for a coal company, it's great because you can then fire more of your coal workers. They'll lose, but you'll win because by blowing up a mountain and not worrying about the environment, you not only increase global warming, but you, by putting toxins in our rivers, you save a lot of money and can fire more coal workers. So those people certainly win. And listen, if you're a billionaire and you have dirty dealings with dictators all across the globe, you're a big winner under Donald Trump. I mean, it's not just his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. I mean, Donald Trump's not the only one not disclosing his financial dealings worldwide. A lot of his interests go through his daughter, Ivanka, and son-in-law, Jared Kushner. And they have dealings with some of these big dictators. But really, if you're a dictator, you're doing well today. Just yesterday, the dictator of Turkey, and I can say this now, it used to be that Turkey was a democracy. I used to praise Turkey, frankly, as the one Arab democracy on the globe. And with respect to Tunisia, it's trying, and I think Tunisia may just make it, hopefully. But Turkey was the real one. Turkey was a secular democracy with a Muslim, I shouldn't say Arab, the Middle Eastern. They're really a Turkish population. They're a different population from Arabs. But here you have a Muslim democracy that had stood as a secular democracy with firm democratic traditions really since Harry Truman, since World War II. Erdogan, by cheating in an election, has just given himself vast dictatorial powers. And I don't know, maybe he saw the trends. He saw Putin. Russia certainly was a fledgling democracy for a few years under Yeltsin until Putin took it back to dictatorship. Turkey's going back to dictatorship. God knows what's going to happen in the French election. But if you are a nationalist, if you're a racist, if you're a Klansman or someone in the new neo-Nazi alt-right movement, well, obviously you're a big fan of Donald Trump. If you're someone who hates diversity, if you're someone who really wants to mistreat women, then you're a real Trump winner. And I want you to think about how the intersection of the fact that Trump doesn't give a damn about women and the fact that he's rounding up undocumented immigrants, not just those that have committed crimes, folks. In fact, the amount of undocumented that have not committed crimes that are being rounded up for deportation is way up. And I want you to think about how this affects immigrant communities. See, when Donald Trump first started running for office and gave his incoherent hour-long speech, there's really only 20 seconds of it anybody remembers. He was talking all over the map. Most of the people were ignoring him. Pretty much everyone thought he was a joke. And yet there were 20 seconds or so that electrified the nation. Some of us mocked it. Some of us were horrified, and others obviously liked it. And that's the part where he said Mexico is sending its rapists, drug dealers, and some he assumes are nice people, but, you know, the vast majority are rapists. And I was thinking about a Mexican rapist. I was thinking about whether Donald Trump has really gone after the very demographic that that propelled him to the presidency. Now, to be fair, there aren't that many undocumented rapists out there. In fact, you'll find that American citizens commit sexual assault at a far greater rate than undocumented immigrants. So there really aren't that many out there, but some, no doubt, do exist. And here's the great thing if you want to rape women. As long as you rape undocumented women, you get carte blanche. I want you to think about this. The rate of reporting of sexual assault among undocumented. Indeed, the rate of crime reporting among the undocumented is way, way, way down in just a few months, just since Trump took the presidency. And no, I don't think that crime is way down. I don't think that Trump becoming president, suddenly people stopped committing crimes against the undocumented. But see, now, the undocumented are easy targets. I mean, you can pickpocket them. You can rob them. You can steal them blind. Yes, you can commit sexual assault against undocumented immigrants. You can mistreat them in your work. You can do whatever you want. It's like we have our own slave caste. Because if they complain, indeed, even if they go to court to try to get a restraining order, the immigration authorities are waiting outside that court to cart them away. Well, the undocumented know that, and so they know that if they're being raped, they have to shut up and take it. If they're being mistreated by their boss, of course they have to shut up and take it. Heck, even if they're being assaulted. Let's say there are drug gangs in communities. Are they going to report on them? No way! They're not stupid. They know better. They know to let the drug gangs roam freely throughout their neighborhoods. Even in places like Los Angeles that are quite sympathetic to undocumented people, this really helps drug gangs. So if you're a rapist, if you're a criminal, if you are an undocumented member of a drug gang who wants to murder and rape and sell drugs and beat up people, you're doing really well under Donald Trump. And that's a nice little irony, because Donald Trump ostensibly went to office to oppose these people. But drug gang members, those who mistreat undocumented people, they're doing really well. So if you're a sadist, if you're a racist, if you're a misogynist, if you're just someone who likes to see poor people suffer, maybe you believe that all of our health care should be done in emergency rooms, then you'd support the plans for Trump care instead of Obamacare. So let's not say that there are no winners under a Trump administration. If you're a criminal, if you're a dictator, if you're a sadist, if you're someone who really enjoys mistreating others, or heck, if you, I don't know if Twitter's doing better. I'll have to check it on Wall Street. I assume that Twitter is doing better. Other than that, I'm not sure of any winners, but I'm sure some of you can help me. Who do you think are the biggest winners under the Trump administration? Give me a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the Trump winners. Because, you know, they're not all losers under the Trump administration. There are winners as well. And we talked about the fact that if you want to mistreat people or you want to be a dictator. Donald Trump is learning something about dictators. For example, he has said that he needs China. Really? I guess he didn't know that. He didn't realize that North Korea was a threat, that he needed Chinese help. And so he's not going to label them the currency manipulator he was going to label them. And I wonder about the people that voted for him. It's interesting. They seem to forgive anything he does. He can do no wrong. He certainly can sexually assault women. He can lie repeatedly with zero consequences. It's interesting because if you ask them if they believe his lies, some will say yes, some will say no, most will say it doesn't matter. They don't care whether a president tells the truth. They don't care whether a president commits treason. They don't care whether a president is profiting from being president. They don't care that the president is not helping them one iota. Indeed, is harming them. Harming rural America. Harming people who have health care. Harming, well, just about everyone. Women and poor people, middle class people. But there are some that are winning. We talked about the big corporations. Another big winner on the Trump administration, lobbyists. If you make your living trying to get money from the federal government to go to your private company, you're doing very well under Donald Trump. It's interesting. He didn't so much drain the swamp as drunk the swamp. And the swamp is very much inside him and part of him. And it's not just that his administration is full of lobbyists. It's that lobbyists tend to control what goes on in his administration. Now, some of this isn't new. George W. Bush certainly had big business and lobbyists and polluters all be part of his administration. Frankly, Ronald Reagan tended to love polluting the air and making our air dirtier, our water dirtier, and doing whatever he could to help big business succeed in polluting. But what I think is interesting about Donald Trump is that that's not his promises were to help rural America. His promises were to be concerned about trade. And now he's sucking up to the Chinese. And I'm not even saying that's the wrong thing to do. But the question is whether his supporters will ever notice that he's flip-flopped on so many things. It's like poor Sean Spicer, and I actually do have some pity for the man, even though he's kind of aggressive. It's really hard to know what the president's position is when he doesn't have one. And like any 9-year-old, I shouldn't say any 9-year-old child because most are better behaved, but like many 9-year-old children, he flits from one topic to another, from one idea to another. And really, since there is no there, the only thing that Donald Trump cares about is Donald Trump. He'll kind of just say whatever the last person told him to say. Military tells him to bomb Syria, he'll bomb Syria. A Chinese premier tells him, don't punish China, he won't punish China. Someone comes up to him and tells him that they have a conspiracy theory that Obama tapped him, or that illegal immigrants voted, or that Hillary Clinton's running a pizza, a child molesting ring out of a basement of a DC pizza parlor, and he'll just go along with it. He'll believe it because he has no filter. He's got no real understanding of government. So it's interesting, you know, to some extent, it's an experiment, not one I ever would have wanted to do. But it's an experiment on how the United States government can run when there's no one at the helm, when no one is running it. Because Trump only cares about his golf game and the millions of dollars that he's spending of taxpayer dollars, to flit back and forth to Mar-a-Lago, where he spent more time than the White House. But he doesn't really have any there on policy. Look at on health care. On health care, he was all for Trump care. He sold it. He went to the last mile. He did everything he could. And he still insists he's going to do it before he does tax reform. But there's no passion there. Does the man care about anything other than himself? Who are the winners in the Trump administration? I'm going to start taking your calls after this break. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Back after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. You can call in at 888-48-MARK, 888-488-MARK. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I was thinking about what I was going to say, and I was tripped up as I was saying the phone call. Well, Donald Trump said that we would win a lot. In fact, he said,
we're going to win with trade. We're going to win with health. We're going to win at so many levels. We're going to win. You're going to get so tired of winning. You're going to say, Mr. President, please, we don't want to win anymore. It's too much. And I'm going to say, I'm sorry. We're going to keep winning.
I'm sorry. We're going to keep winning. That's all we're going to do is win. Well, yeah, I mean, Vladimir Putin's won. And we talked about the fact if you want to commit crimes against undocumented people, you've won. Who else is winning under this administration? Mike on line one in Gilbert, Arizona, says he's winning. Tell us about it, Mike.
Hi, Mark. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm going to explain to you, as much as I hate to say so, why you and I are winning.
Okay. Go ahead.
For different reasons, let me start with me. First of all, my wife and I are doing okay. My wife's an HR director. I sell health insurance. And under what this administration would like to do, today I couldn't get a subsidy to help me with my health insurance, but what they're proposing would put more money in my pocket to get some sort of health insurance, where today I'm at zero. Now for why I think you and I are winners. The fact that we are being led by this individual told me and so many others like me that there are some real problems that we need to get off our behinds and pay attention. I'm sure your ratings will never be higher. They just keep going up and up and up. I follow a lot of different progressives on television and radio, and instead of watching sports and listening to sports talk, I have taken it upon myself to become more and more aware of my surroundings in this country, realizing that if we don't stand up, this is just the beginning of a nightmare.
And I'll tell you, as a Virginia
State... That makes me a winner.
Yeah, as a Virginia State delegate, I hope to win some seats this November in Virginia in the House of Delegates. We are now a minority. I hope to become a majority. In fact, I think Donald Trump has done a lot to help... rejuvenate those of us, we liberals, and to give us more power. Hopefully, we'll find out in November. But Mike, I want to ask you about healthcare. You say you sell health insurance. So, under Trump Care, the government and who knows what they're actually going to do? Since Republicans obviously have no plan to replace it with. They never have. But at least under the proposed plan, the one that most Republicans supported, they were going to end a lot of the subsidies for people to get health care. And that, I assume,
correct,
would cause, your rates to go way up.
It depends. I went to hear Congressman or Senator Flake this week, and I literally addressed him on this exact issue. Of course, I didn't get any answer. But I stopped selling health insurance because they don't pay a commission anymore. I only do Medicare, but I still follow it. The reality is that when Senator Rubio took the risk corridors away, that said if we get so much heavy loss from this portion of the population that really needs a lot of health care, the government was going to stand behind the carriers. They basically want everybody to buy a $20,000 deductible that you might get to go to your doctor twice a year, and that's insurance.
They all want what's called catastrophic care. That's what they want.
Correct.
The idea is that you don't treat your heart condition. Maybe it's very easily treatable. Maybe you could just take some pills and treat it. You don't treat it. You get your high blood pressure. You don't treat it. And then you end up in the emergency room needing a quintuple heart bypass where they're going to cut into your chest.
I have two stents. I walked into a doctor's office, said, hey, you need to go to the hospital. 48 hours later, with insurance covered it, with a $90,000 bill, they have two stents put in.
Right, $90,000. Now, if it were covered, and maybe, Mike, I don't know, maybe you were covered and just didn't see your doctor, but if you had seen your doctor for preventative care and he'd just given you some pills, those pills may have been expensive. They may have been $500. They may have even been $1,000, but they wouldn't be $90,000 on the healthcare system because, as Ben Franklin once said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
It's not that much. We're just talking about basic cholesterol and blood pressure meds, although, again, I was in good health. It was just a narrowing of an artery.
But my point is that what Trump Care does is he encourages less preventive care, less maintenance, you can't afford to see a doctor for a physical. But if you have no health insurance, and most people under Trump Care would lose their insurance unless it's provided by their employer, then you still have the emergency room. So people then start using the emergency room like an ordinary doctor, in which case it's not only much, much more expensive, but it knocks out people who have real emergencies. Or more likely, people just wait until they have an emergency, and that's one of the reasons why the United States healthcare is the most expensive by far in the world, with less good outcomes. So that's the thing. If you want to pay more for healthcare and you want to live less long, then you're a winner. You're a winner under Donald Trump.
Well, no. So there, we know who the big winner would be. The insurance, the more you can have an insurance company come between you and your care, deciding what they would like to provide you, the bigger they are a winner.
Right. The other thing is that it was interesting because in the campaign, Donald Trump actually said something that I've been advocating for more than a decade now. and that is to allow the government to negotiate lower drug prices, which every other nation does. It's one of the reasons why their Medicare is cheaper than our Medicare. And I just haven't heard that much about that.
As a matter of fact, there was a real good report this weekend. Everything you need to find out about drug care has to do with, it's called PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers. The drug companies are selling to the distributors who are selling to us, and these pharmacy benefit managers are taking money off of both halves for doing nothing. And it's just legalized robbery in the drug system.
Yeah. No, that's true. And it's a big benefit for them. I just got a cholesterol drug for me, and I tried to go through my health insurance. And for this 90-day supply of this drug, they wanted some $800. That's after insurance. That's about $10 a pill. Finally, I found a discounter that went down to only $240 for 90 pills. Still quite expensive. Obviously, if I were a Canadian, I would get it for free or for very cheap, for nothing at all. But you're right. If you're in that industry, you do very well.
Don't realize that the drug costs, at least for the seniors, are tied to Obamacare. The last thing they did the night they enacted the bill was put in something that says, it's called the coverage gap, that people end up without drug coverage in Medicare. That's been going away for the last 7 years, and it would continue to go away until it disappears in 2020. If they pull the rug on Obamacare, the average senior will see a $2,000 a year increase in their drug costs.
Yep. So, like I said, if you like ripping off seniors, you are a winner. See, there are winners under Donald
Thank
Trump.
You.
Thanks for your call, Mike. Let's go to Jake in Eureka, California on line 3. Hey, Jake, how are you?
Hey, Mark. I'd say some of the real winners of discussing Donald Trump's disastrous debacle of a so-called presidency would be professional career politicians. I don't think you're going to see any amateur politician get anywhere near the presidency next time around.
Yeah.
You have a newfound respect for people who actually know what they're doing in office. It's actually a benefit to have somebody with experience and intelligence.
You know what's interesting about him being an amateur is there was this thought in among Trumpists, a lot of Americans did vote for him. 3 million more chose Hillary, but he got second place. They thought that because he knew nothing about Washington, nothing about politics, nothing about issues, nothing about policy, that he'd be able to change everything. It turns out when you know nothing, it's easier for people to put one over on you. Let me give you an example. I know virtually nothing about car mechanics, all right? I don't. I'm not sure I could point out the carburetor or tell you, you know, where it is. I can change a tire and my oil, and that's about it. Maybe put some windshield wiper fluid in there. But put me around a spark plug, and I don't even know where to put it, all right? So someone might say, well, Mark, you know nothing about car mechanics. You should go in there, and you should fix the cars. Because you know nothing, you're going to change. Car mechanics is expensive. They're way overcharging us. Mark, you get in there. You know nothing about it, and you're going to change the system. Well, if I did go in there and start to run a car mechanic shop, I'd have to rely on the people who do know something. I'd have to rely on the experts, the people who know what it costs to fix something. And even if I talked really tough, eventually I'd be like, oh, it takes $700 to fix a carburetor. What does a carburetor do again? And that's what Donald Trump's doing. See, if you don't know what you're doing, a lobbyist comes in and he says, I'm the lobbyist for this oil company or a coal company. Yeah, I'm going to fix coal, he said. We're going to make coal great. Well, then the coal companies say, here's how we make coal great. Let us bomb these mountains. We're only going to use explosives a bit larger than they use at Hiroshima. And that way we can get coal cheaply out of the mountains. We'll have to fire, 90% of our workers, but the coal will come. And they won't mention all the poisons that are raining down. And let's face it, West Virginia is only the source of all the rivers on the East Coast and all the rivers in the Mississippi Valley. So how much of this country is affected by either the East Coast or the Mississippi Valley? I mean, a few people, just a few, right? So by raining arsenic from West Virginia, toxins all down our river stream, we could take out 2/3 of the country. It's really win-win-win. Tired of winning.
Yeah, I don't think blowing up mountains in West Virginia is exactly going to benefit anybody in the region at all.
Oh, but it benefits the coal companies, you see. It is cheaper to blow up a mountain than to pay for a bunch of coal miners who've done this hard, dirty work for 100 years. It's really, you know, you have to pay for them, and then they die, and you have to pay funeral benefits and things like that. Now, you just blow up the mountain. You transform. What's really cool is that these mountains have been around for about 4 billion years. The Appalachian Mountains are some of the oldest mountains on the planet. Not just way, way older than human history, but like the Rockies are relatively young. They're only like a billion years old. The Appalachians are some of the Appalachians date from when all the earth was one land together. They're that old. And you can take something that's been around for 4 billion years, for 99.9999% of the time humans didn't exist, and you can transform them forever into a lunar landscape. And many people think the moon is very pretty. And so who needs birds and trees and rivers and such? You know, I mean, if you like flat, black rock, there you go. Win. Winner.
Yeah, I guess like Charlie Sheen said.
Yeah, winning, just like, right? Charlie Sheen. Actually, there's a lot of, I think Charlie Sheen and Donald Trump have a lot in common, though I think Charlie Sheen is a little bit more in control. But other than that, I think they do have a lot in common.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen might actually be a little more intelligent than Donald Trump, too.
Yeah, here's the thing about Trump. It's interesting. I don't know that it's intelligence. I mean, although he clearly doesn't seem to know how to spell or, I mean, if I were sending a tweet out to millions of people, our president of the United States, I don't know, I might do a spell check first. You know, tap is not a tough word. You know, it has three letters, not four. I guess by kindergarten, most people can spell three-letter words, but, you know, not everyone. But so I don't know that it's intelligence. What I think it is when you've been given everything you've ever wanted at a moment's notice, even things that are illegal, things that you can't have, you know, I mean, he stole $1 billion in taxes. He stole $1 billion from the American people. And he basically made a $1 billion loss and then – but he didn't lose a penny because it was other people's money. And then he claimed it as his own loss. So once you can do that, once you are so thrilled that you can grab any woman by the, I hate to say the word he used, and know that you can just grab what you want and get what you want. You know, in many ways, he's a lot like Kim Jong-un of North Korea. You know, once you're thrust into power and can do whatever you want with no consequences, it's not a question of intelligence or not. It's just a question of he's above spelling, you see. He's above true. He's above policy. He doesn't need to know policy. His biographer, the person who wrote The Art of the Deal, Tony Schwartz, said that Donald Trump is like a 9-year-old with ADHD, with attention deficit disorder. And he said, I'm not joking. That's actually who the man is. And I think that's what we're learning about him. Hey, thanks for your call, Jake. I appreciate it. I'm going to take some more calls when we come back. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Who are the Trump winners? Winning! Who are they? We'll be right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, from Washington, D.C. Let's go to Jan on line two in Burnett, Massachusetts. Hey, Jan, how are you?
Hi there. Hi, my name is Jan, and I'm calling from Massachusetts, and
great.
I've never called a show before.
Wow, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm 82 years old, and I enjoy your conversation, and I share your feelings about Lucifer Trump.
Yeah.
And the reason that I called is I had quite a while ago, before all this brouhaha started, as far as him running and all that, I had read that his dad died of Alzheimer's. And I know that that's hereditary, and I've never heard anyone else mention it.
That's interesting.
And I thought that's certainly important. Of course.
Yes, it's very interesting. You know, he did really, just like he didn't submit his tax returns, he didn't submit health records. He got this wild doctor who basically signed whatever Donald Trump wrote, you know, I'm the best health of any person alive ever in human history, which, of course, is not a health exam. It's just
meanwhile, I understand he has a 24-hour doctor at the White House.
Where did you read that, Jen? Oh, no, no, that's true. No, in general, that's true. It's interesting. Generally, the president, I think there is a doctor that's on staff. Actually, I'm not sure. I'll have to check that out, but I'm sure they could get one.
Well, anyway, I knew that, you know, if this were so, you could certainly look it up.
It's a fair point. I'll tell you, you know, Ronald Reagan had Alzheimer's as our last, Donald Trump's our oldest president ever. People don't talk about that very much. Donald Trump.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the oldest person ever elected to a first term. Ronald Reagan was elected to a second term. I'll tell you this, though. You're 82, and it sounds like your mind's clear as a bell. So, Jan, I want you to be president rather than Donald. So, please, I want you to run in 2020, okay? Thanks for calling in.
I'll be glad to. I'll start polishing my
You're clearly more on the ball than he is. And I appreciate your calling. Call back sometime. I'm on Mondays and Wednesdays, all right? Thanks, Jan. Let's go to Dave in line 4. Dave, from a first-time caller to probably my longest-time caller, Dave in Humboldt County, California. How are you, sir?
Mark, it's good to have you back. I know you can't do everything all year, but good to have you on the right season here for us.
It is good to be back.
The issues that have concerned me and you, both of us, for a lot of years still are there, and if nothing, they seem to be getting worse. That is... can we yet count on our electronic voting? How are we getting criminals in our government that act to our detriment? How is it our post office is being bankrupt right in front of our eyes? What can we, the people, do to do any steps that would turn this in a direction that would be in our best interest?
I'll try to answer your question, Dave. You might want to turn your radio down there. I know it's hard for me to talk when I'm hearing feedback, so it's probably tough for you as well. Well, I think already we're starting to see what people are doing. I've been very impressed from the Women's March on. I mean, the Women's March is the largest protest in all of American history. People don't focus on that. Larger than at any time in American history. Larger than the anti-war protests for a single day. Larger than civil rights protests. It wasn't just the 750,000 people, possibly much more, depending on who you talk to in Washington, D.C. It was all across the country, all across the globe. So I think the protesters are starting the conversation. We talked about tax day. They're not finishing it. Obviously, it only finishes when we vote. And if you go out and protest and that's all you do, and then you go home and feel satisfied, well, obviously you haven't done enough. The protesters are making their voice heard. People are filling town halls. You've seen a lot of Republican congressmen, congresswomen who are having difficulty responding to their constituents. I guess there are not that many Republican women in Congress, or a few. So that's good. But at the end of the day, it's all about voting. It's all about what we nationwide do in 2018. Are we going to help our local Democratic parties? Are we going to get out there and organize? Are we talking to our friends and neighbors and making sure they vote? Because too many of us only vote once every 4 years. And I guess I'll end by putting in a plug for my home state of Virginia. Now, most of you know I am a Virginia state delegate. That's why I'm not on the air January through March. I'm only on the air April through December. Because I'm serving in Richmond and writing laws and everything. But we are minority in Virginia. Democrats are only a third of the seats, the 100 seats. The first big election is not 2018, friends. It's this November 2017. So talk to me offline. Send me an email. Send me a Facebook note. And I'll let you know how you can help us in Virginia.